good evening and welcome to The Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannan and joining me in studio tonight I have Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Anne Rabbitt, Fianna Fáil TD for Galway East and party spokesperson on Children and Youth Affairs, Hugh O'Connell, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, Diarmaid Ferreter, Professor of Modern Irish History in UCD and Fergus Finlay, Irish Examiner columnist and former Labour Party advisor. Now we do want to hear from you, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @LateDebateRTE, #RTELD. Now, back in May 2016, Brendan Howlin heralded a new dawn for the Labour Party after he was elected unopposed as the party leader.
Cleaning up the mess left by others may not have proven electorally popular, but it was a job that had to be done. Now, Labour and Ireland are in a strong position again to grow. We have values that are immutable. They're not going away anytime soon. We have endured 100 years and we will endure 100 more.
Today, Brendan Howlin became the latest Labour Party leader to step down in the wake of a poor election result.
I think that's the right time for myself and it's the right time for the party. I'm very pleased that we have a number of new members of the parliamentary party now, new TDs elected.
Yeah.
I would have liked more, and I think it's time now for the baton to be passed on to the next phase of development of the party so that the Labour Party can perform its role as it has done for decades.
Brendan Howlin there speaking after he announced his intention to step down today. Fergus Finlay, you would have worked closely with Brendan Howlin over the years.
Oh, for a long, long time. And I want to begin by saying that I think he is one of the most honourable people I ever worked with, and what he did today was typical of him. Brendan tried to get elected in 1983 for the party and failed. He was appointed to the Senate. Shortly after that, 11 members of the Dáil voted against the Eighth Amendment. Only 11. Eight of them were Labour TDs. In the Senate, very few senators voted against the Eighth Amendment. Brendan was one of them. He was subjected at the time. He was a very young man. He was still in his 20s. I think he was the youngest person to vote against the Eighth Amendment. He was subjected at the time to an incredible campaign. It was targeted on his house, on his mother's house, on all his family in Wexford, over his stance on the Eighth Amendment. And he didn't waver. He was tough. He was gutsy. Later on, when he became Minister for Health, he ended the charade that Ireland had endured or enjoyed for years around condoms. He was the Minister for Health who made condoms legal. Maybe the last country in the world to make condoms legal.
We must have been there or thereabouts.
But we had been through a period when you could buy a condom in Ireland, provided a chemist was willing to sell it to you and provided you were able to produce your marriage certificate in the chemist shop. That was the famous Irish solution to an Irish problem introduced by Charles Haughey. Brendan was the one who ended that and just made them simply legal. And he's done a lot more besides. He's spent a time as Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform dealing on a weekly basis with the Troika. Himself and Michael Noonan had to meet the Troika. They strolled over from the Merion Hotel to government buildings and ordered Ireland around. And he sought his job to fight for Ireland against them. It was probably the single most unpopular job he could have had ever. Because you can't go out on the steps of government buildings and say, I've ordered these bastards to leave town.
You're saying this is somebody who was also a Minister for Health, which is the other single most popular.
Yeah, well, when he was Minister for Health, he wrote a white paper, which had he had time to implement it before he left office, would not have resulted in the creation of the monolith that is the HSE and would have been a much better. He also reintroduced beds into the health system, beds that had been taken out by the Fianna Fáil government that was elected after 1989.
Okay.
He was a very, very significant politician and remains, in my view, a very significant human being and man.
Hugh.
Yeah.
Do you recognise the saint?
Oh, completely, yeah. Well, not a saintly figure, perhaps, but certainly Brendan Howlin was one of the better politicians that we've had in this country. Of course, his political career isn't over, but I think in recent years, obviously, he would have been associated with the Fine Gael Labour government that implemented really swinging austerity in this country and took some really Some would say difficult, others would say exceptionally harsh decisions on some of that affected and impacted some of the most vulnerable in society.
Was he the wrong choice at that time, given that baggage that he brought into the situation, given his age profile, given where they were trying to take Labour?
I think in hindsight, yes. I think that he stabilised the ship somewhat in the Labour Party. He did bring in new candidates, and we did see some of them in the general election campaign. They didn't get elected, with the exception of Duncan Smith and Dublin Fingal. But there are some who are in position now that it bodes well for the future in terms of future elections for the Labour Party. But I think in a situation where they were down to 7 TDs, where they were in amongst a series of other opposition parties, including Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin and, you know, the Social Democrats and a lot of independents as well, they needed a battler and a bruiser and someone as abrasive perhaps as Alan Kelly. But ultimately, he did not command sufficient or, in fact, any support in Labour's parliamentary party at that time.
Will he this time?
No, not necessarily. And obviously, I think he will face a challenge this time. First of all, I don't think Labour will allow the situation to arise where they coronate or there's a coronation for a leader. I think there will be a contest. I think Alan Kelly should be allowed to participate in that. I think most people in Labour would agree with that
And I think there was a sense the last time, wasn't there, Fergus, that even you might not have supported Alan Kelly as the next Labour leader, but the fact that he wasn't even, you know, allowed to put himself forward, that he couldn't get a seconder.
Well, he couldn't get a seconder, and that, I suppose, tells you something. I wasn't involved, and I don't know all of the background of that.
Well, he couldn't get a seconder because he wasn't liked by his parliamentary colleagues.
And that's a bit of a handicap. Do you know?
Yeah,
it's a bit of a handicap.
It is, but he was appreciated by the membership, who 2 years previous to that voted in great numbers to make him deputy leader of the party.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think it wasn't a great look for Labour that they allowed that to happen. And I think they can't allow it to happen this time. They have to have a contest. Alan Kelly has made no secret of his ambition to lead the Labour Party. He should be allowed contest for the leadership.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope whatever happens, that there is an open contest, that anyone who wants to run, you know, who's elected.
But there was a generational issue there, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you're talking about the right look, Brendan was the wrong look for the Labour Party at that stage, partly because of generation, partly because he had been a part of that government. And there'll always be an interesting debate about the decision that the Labour Party made in 2011, because they had the option of staying out and perhaps seeking to build even more, even bigger, or they had the option of going in. And Eamon Gilmore, interestingly, when he was asked after the 2016 election about the decision that they had made, he said, well, we could have put the party first or we could have put the country first. You know, and there was a degree of sincerity in that, which I wouldn't doubt. But this question of...
Looking at Matt Carty's face, you know, here, but go on.
Whether or not Brendan Howland, I felt, seemed to enjoy it a little bit too much. There was a take your medicine tone that people saw coming from Brendan Howland, which didn't serve him well at all. But that dilemma for the Labour Party, it's always been a part of the Labour Party dilemma about whether you stay in or whether you go out.
Because every single time,
I mean, the old
every single time,
mantra,
the pattern is,
you know, Labour,
so
Labour does best when Labour stands alone was the old mantra, you know. And I mean, they had to face what, not just the elections that they faced, they also had to face what state the country was in at various stages and what they felt they could contribute. And there's no point in dancing on Brendan Howland's grave, because the Labour Party has done this state considerable service since the foundation of the state, especially at the foundation of the state. But you mentioned earlier on, you know, about whether or not, you know, Labour was going to do it their way or Frankfurt's way. Yeah, yeah. Do you remember that particular slogan? And it ended up being Frankfurt's way. And that left the Labour Party hugely compromised.
We've got a text in here. Brendan Howland, like Eamon Gilmore and Pat Rabbit, they had all the populist answers when in opposition, but sold out the working people when breaking all promises when in power. 6 Labour TDs shows the people haven't forgotten that, says Sean Maher in Wexford. I was going to say to Matt Carthy, could this text be written about Mary Lou MacDonald and Eoin O'Brien in 4 years' time?
I think we've a duty and an obligation to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I get all the personal attributes to Brendan Howland. I've met him once or twice, and yes, he's a very nice man, and I don't doubt that he's very sincere. But let's just remember what happened in 2011. You know, this wasn't a case that Labour had to go into government or there wouldn't have been a government. They sold their entry into government as a bulwark against Fine Gael austerity, the harsh agenda that was being pursued. And rather than being that bulwark, they instead became champions of it. You know, at a time when families were at their lowest ebb, when we were still watching, you know, tens of thousands of people travelling to the airport to leave their home communities, when we had all the devastation that was caused by really harsh and sometimes really nasty cuts that were overseen by Brendan Howland's department. He stood up in the Dáil on Budget Day and gloated, who speaks of Syriza now? He gloated about the failure of a government that actually set out to try and renegotiate the bailout conditions that they were imposed with. Almost as celebrating the fact that his government made no attempt, no real attempt to actually ensure that it was Labour's way over Frankfurt.
I think
was definitely a moment where there was a wince from, you know, from many people, the who speaks of Syriza.
Absolutely, yeah. And look, that they did make some shocking decisions that did impact some of the most vulnerable in society. But this idea that they weren't a bulwark against Fine Gael, I mean, like, Fine Gael wanted to do some really savage stuff if they had a chance to between 2011 and 2016. You know, Leo Varadkar wanted to cut job seekers' allowance. He wanted to do, you know, he was, and he said this in correspondence to Brendan Howland at the time. And, you know, Howland has spoken about that subsequently. And it's all there on the record now.
Well, can I make one more
Fine, you know, to be fair to Labour, they did get a lot of things wrong, I think, between 2011 and 2016. And they did leave a lot of hostages to fortune in the 2011 campaign. But they did act as a bulwark to some degree against what Fine Gael.
Well, can I make one final point? And this is actually in the post-2016. Because whatever you might say about Fianna Fáil in government, and they were disastrous prior to 2011, they did purposely set out afterwards to at least say they were sorry. Whether people believe them or not is another thing. Generally speaking, when parties have very strong messages from the electorate, and you can't get much stronger than the message that the electorate send to the Labour Party, you accept that verdict. The Labour Party since 2016, and particularly Brendan Howland, are even today still fighting the battle of the 2016 election and making no contrition for their actions.
That's one of the reasons why Labour haven't recovered in that 4 years.
I think some Labour TDs and senators, I'm thinking Eoin O'Riordan has in this studio, and many times acknowledged that huge mistakes were made.
We didn't do it right, and we didn't do it properly, and I might surprise Matt to know that I agree with them about that. I mean, I opposed Labour going into government twice in my life, in 2011 and also in 1994 when I wanted Labour to bring the government down.
Another thing there, you were very badly punished for changing.
Horses. But that government, we didn't manage ourselves well in that government, and we let our own voters down more than once in that government.
In what way? What was your worst mistake in that time?
Well, I mean, I've always felt that what was seen as an attack on single parents was perhaps completely unnecessary and seemed to be gratuitous, and was the worst thing we did. And I also think that, unlike Micheál Martin, who made a virtue out of apologising. We didn't. The difference, I think, in a way, is that Micheál Martin, when he stood up to apologise, he was apologising for Bertie and Albert and a lot of stuff. Brendan Howland found it very difficult to apologise for decisions that he had taken in good faith. And that there is a difference there. But it should have been much better done and much better managed.
I mean,
he knows that himself.
Well, he might know it, but he hasn't said it out loud.
I think there's still a lot of defensiveness about all that, and I think one of the things that Brendan is doing today is leaving the way clear for those amends to be made, and he may be admitting that he can't do it,
and maybe it's too late. This is the interesting question.
I just want to let Anne wrap it in, because you've been very quiet there, Anne.
No, I suppose I have sat back and I've listened to it, and Fergus is best placed to discuss and to talk about Brendan, to be fair to him. And I suppose Alan Kelly just lives across the Shannon from me, and I suppose the talk down home at the time was the lack of opportunity to let Alan go forward when he wanted to at the time. And I think maybe they have got punished along the way, because they needed a more youthful person to lead it with a little bit of vigour and determination. I suppose over the last 2 years, Alan on the cervical has really showed himself and his capabilities on it. And I think this time around, I think you could see Alan Kelly coming very much to the forefront.
But they are going to have to, you know, they are going to have to look at this question of what they stand for now. And I mean, they're an old party, a very old party. They're older than Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They're older than various iterations of Sinn Féin as well. But that's become part of their problem. You know, the rejuvenation didn't occur. And if you look at the profile of the people who are voting for them, they've all sorts of problems, and they have the Sock Dems now as well, who seem to be going.
Well, isn't that the big question, really?
Territory.
When you look at the Sock Dems and you look at what they stand for, you know, that platform is very much, you know, you could close your eyes and say those are the type of issues that you could have heard.
The values are the same.
It's a social democrat.
But when you talk about the 2011 to 2016 and what and this particular general election, what really annoyed most people and most women in particular is what happened to women's pensions and the change that took place at that point in time. And it's been a huge issue for the last 4 years about how women's pensions have been affected. And I think it has continued to punish Labour again in this general election.
Yeah, OK, but go back to that point, Dermot, about where does Labour go? How does it position itself? Are we just looking at, again, as happened in the past, another reverse takeover, this time with the Sock Dems?
Yes, that's certainly possible. And it's not just about Labour and the Sock Dems. It's about the wider fracturing of the political landscape, you know, and where they might manage their political mission as they see it now. Like, where do they fit in exactly? You know, how can they distinguish themselves? What platform can they stand on? And the urban-rural issue is also very important, because historically the Labour Party had very strong roots in certain parts of rural Ireland.
With the Penrose seat gone.
Exactly, yeah.
With the Kerry seat gone.
But I mean, even looking at the profile of the people who were, you know, representing those constituencies and the age, that's been a problem for a long time, and it wasn't addressed when it needed to be addressed.
Of course it's a problem. I do remember, though, in 81 and again in 87, I remember Vincent Brown, of all people, writing long editorial saying, bye-bye Labour Party, they're gone now.
Oh, the obituary has been prepared many times.
It has been prepared and written and published many times. What's there now is a new generation of, by and large, younger people. I suspect there will be much closer relationships with the Social Democrats. Although relationships at the top of both those parties, I understand, are a little on the difficult side. But the values are essentially the same. And who knows, there may be a discussion. But I think, to be honest, being absolutely honest, Labour's biggest problem is not the Social Democrats, it's Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin has eaten Labour's lunch. They built constituencies, and they built it through hard work and representation in places that were Labour bailiwicks. And I think it's going to be very difficult in some of those places for Labour to unseat the Sinn Féin people. But that's the job that has to be done. Sorry, Matt.
I'll just go to a few more. Just
for Labour.
I'll go back to you, Matt, because we have a few more texts. Just there's a lot coming in on Labour. If Labour could not pick up votes in a left tsunami election, the writing's on the wall. No comeback from what they inflicted with Fine Gael, says Den. As a Labour voter for many years, I feel that Labour let us down. They looked after the rich and made us, the workers, pay the piper. They may as well have joined Fine Gael. There was no difference. Now I vote Sinn Féin. There you are there, Fergus. There's a difference from, that's Patrick Doyle in Glasnevin. Worst ever decision was to go into government with Fine Gael in 2011, says former Labour councillor Connie Foley. Do you feel that, sense that, you know, in terms of out in the constituents, that a lot of people who might have been Labour voters in the past are now in your...
This election was particularly surprising. I come from a constituency that has always had a very strong Sinn Féin presence, or at least in my adult life. My first election campaign was the 97 election, when Caoimhín O'Caolan became the first Sinn Féin TD to take their seat in Leinster House. I come from the stronger end of that constituency, at least over the last 15 years. But I was really surprised this year in terms of where the support was coming from. And it was coming from all over the place, particularly, I have to say, from Fianna Fáil houses that would, you know, usually be pleasant. And this time round, we're saying, you know, Fianna Fáil under Micheál Martin is not the Republican Party that we thought it was. So there was that. There was a particular issue this election that I hope maintains where we met lots of people who had never voted in their whole lives, of people of all ages. My own office in Carrickmacross, the day before the voter registration for the supplementary register was closed, there was queues down the street. We've never seen that. We're usually out trying to get people,
Party, the Green Party took votes away from Labour as well, you know, particularly middle-class Labour votes. An awful lot of them went to the Green Party, and they've been doing that for quite a while.
OK, so who's going to step up to be the next Labour leader to last until the next poor electoral performance?
One of six.
Could it be any one of the six, do you think?
I don't see why not. I mean, I don't see why not. Alan Kelly is the most experienced now of you know, the ones that are.
And to be fair to Alan Kelly, he has done a lot of work and has a very high profile over the last couple of years.
And made the point a minute ago that.
But Sean Sherlock has ruled himself out.
Okay, so one of five.
One of five, yeah.
And could Duncan Smith really come into the Dáil?
I don't think so, to be honest. No,
so then we're looking at... let's just narrow it down to who we're really talking about.
I mean, I have no idea.
We're looking at...
We're looking at Éan
O'Riordan, Jed Nash or Alan Kelly.
I mean, Anne made the point earlier that Alan, perhaps more than any other member of the Dáil, championed the women involved in the Sir Michael Jack controversy and fought an incredible battle to vindicate them and to, you know, to expose what was.
And performed really, really strongly, I think anyone would acknowledge, at that health committee.
Yes, yes, I think so. I think so. And you know, and fair play, you know.
Is that another one of the problems they have, the lack of women? And it's a very interesting issue to arise out of the general election generally in relation to female candidates. I mean, there hasn't been that much of a shift in the percentage of female representation. But again, that the Labour Party
is a huge problem.
Very much a male bastion now.
Hugh, if you were putting money on any of those three candidates?
I think Alan Kelly.
You think Alan Kelly is going to do it this time?
I think he's the leader the Labour Party probably needs at this stage. But, you know, I mean, I've heard his pitch for the leadership in the past, you know, and I heard his pitch for the deputy leadership in 2014. Maybe Éan O'Riordan or Jed Nash have a more interesting pitch, but I think that he would have been the leader in 2016 to energise the party and to make it relevant in the 32nd Dáil. He made himself relevant in the 32nd Dáil, but his party was, came a distant second. So I think that he would be.
Well, I've just got a text in here. People have not forgotten Alan Kelly and the water charges! Exclamation mark.
Also, Minister for Housing
Dermot
as well.
In
at
Dublin.
A time when the rot really set in.
Do the panel think it fair to say Gilmore et al. Were not Labourites and sabotaged the official left? Says Donald.
I think that one of the biggest mistakes that Labour made in the last few years was actually trying to. Instigating the circumstances which led to Eamon Gilmore's resignation in 2014. I think he should have stayed. I think Labour would have done better in 2016.
That was a pretty extraordinary volte-face from the man who brought in the 37 seats to one bad local election and straight out the door.
But if you think about it, I mean, even at the end of 2010, I mean, there was talk of Gilmore for Taoiseach. You know, at one stage, there were opinion polls showing that the Labour Party was the most popular party in the country. And it's remarkably quick to unravel. Now, that has a lot to do with the circumstances that the country found itself in from 2010 onwards. You would wonder, will history be somewhat kinder to the Labour Party for the decision that they made at that time? You might say the same in relation to confidence and supply. Was that the right thing to do at a particular juncture? We keep talking about a fractured political landscape, but one thing we've had is relative stability. And Ireland has stood out in comparative terms when you consider that. You know, we've been a remarkably stable political entity through a very, very difficult period. And there were decisions that were made, both by Fianna Fáil and the Labour Party, which may have contributed to that stability. So taking the long view, you might get a more nuanced
Politics doesn't really do well with the long
that's
view.
That's how I was going to finish. That's not what the
is that the problem?
You think about the long view.
Let me put one thing to you here, one last thing, because I do want to move on to the government negotiations. Labour are a party for the property-owning boomer generation on their defined benefit pensions. Why should anyone below the age of 50 vote for them?
Well, first of all, I think that's nonsense. I think that's absolute rubbish. I mean, I look back and people like Frank Klusky and Jimmy Tully and, you know, the idea that Labour would be that kind of a party, it's just nonsense. There was a time in my life when I was the only parliamentary employee of the party and parties only had one in those days. And my job, my salary, my job, my income, my livelihood, everything depended on my electing seven TDs. And I remember fighting an election in 87 when, for most of a very, very long night, I was looking at 60 Ds and no job. I was gone, finished, over. And in the end, Dick Spring staggered over the line by four votes. Yeah. And we barely survived by the skin of our teeth. And 5 years after that came the spring tide. So I'm not going to write the Labour Party off. I'm not going to say it's done, it's dusted. That obituary has been written far too many times. It's a massive challenge that the party faces now. But it has good people, it has loyal members, it has an incredibly strong democratic tradition, and it has very, very deep-rooted values. What it has to do is find them again, articulate them again, believe in them again, and go and bloody well fight for them again.